Hello there! This show contains material which a truly free society would neither fear nor suppress. The language and concepts contained herein will not cause eternal torment in the place where the guy with the horns and pointed stick conducts his business.
We are back in black.
You are wearing black, actually.
That's right.
You gonna give us some street cred, or are you gonna lay, you know, put a little smackdown on the show?
No, I'm recovering. We had a drive-by the other day, and a couple of my homies got gunned down.
That's not funny, man. That happens every day.
I know. I said yesterday. What are you, deaf?
Well, you know, what are you gonna do? So anyway, we got a special guest today. He's on via internet Skype. We Skyped him.
Sounds painful.
Yeah, well, we all know how painful that can be, actually. And he's a friend of both of ours, known him a really long time. And in our quest to get our Skype cable working, we just figured we'd have him on the show.
Yeah.
So he's out there in Skype land. It's Leo Lincourt from NeuralGourmet.com, one of the coolest blogs on the internet. What's going on, Leo?
Hey there. High technology.
Gotta love it.
Yeah, we can hear your voice. Amazing. We're like back in the 1800s.
I feel like Alexander Graham Bell.
Watson, get in here. I'm on fire.
Next, we're going to start playing Wax Records.
You said wax.
I did. So anyway, what do you got, John? Leo, you got any news tidbits? Anything for the intro? Wow, talk about a tough room. Dead silence.
Well, who's supposed to talk here?
Well, when we're not talking, you can talk. Well, I want to mention something. We talked about it a couple of weeks ago, the whole
Wait,
enhanced...
don't tell me it's Floyd Landis again.
No, it's the whole enhanced Star Trek original series stuff. Tonight is when it airs. In fact, East Coast time, it'll begin in about an hour and 10 minutes because today is Saturday and it's about 10 of 6. How do you feel about that, Leo, the whole enhancing the effects?
Well, I don't like it. Change. Change bad.
No, but, you know, could you amplify that a little bit?
Say it louder.
Back in the 60s, they did the best they could with what they had and still managed to produce what I would say is art. You know, so by changing it now, you're messing with the vision of the original creators of the show.
It's like putting graffiti on the Sistine Chapel.
Yes, exactly.
And John rolled his eyes. Your turn, John.
I'm out of this one because you guys are fans, and I'm not that big of a fan of the original. So, I mean, I agree that it's an art form of sorts. I wouldn't necessarily put it up there with the Sistine Chapel. But you're killing me, man.
Well... I mean, I saw the same prototype, I guess, that you guys did on Yahoo, or YouTube, or whatever, one of those video sites. And, I mean, what they were doing looked good. But, you know, if it was being done today, I'd say, cool, great, go for it. But, I don't know. You're messing with the original.
Well, I talked about this, and I don't have a... It's not like they're making Greedo shoot first or actually changing the plot like Lucas did in the first Star Wars film and all that.
That would be cool, though, if they actually put Greedo in Star Trek.
Well, that would be cool. So I don't have as big a problem with it. I mean, you know, when we get done taping the show, I'm going to, you know, make John's son stop playing his video game and maybe we can actually watch it or something and we'll see how it goes. But yeah, that'll be fun. But speaking of Floyd Landis, his legal team has applied for a motion to kind of dismiss all the charges against him because, as I mentioned, did we actually even talk about that? There were a series of problems with the testing procedures on his pee samples. So that, I don't know. I don't think the guy did it. I really don't.
You know what's going to happen? They're going to finally figure this out, and then the head of Floyd Landis in its canister will speak out and in his own defense. That's how long this is going to be going on.
The head in his canister?
Yeah, I mean, this is going to be like the year 3020, and Rich is going to still be saying, well, we've got new evidence on Floyd Landis.
What, they freeze him like they did Walt Disney? What are we talking about?
That's right. He'll say, you can sample some of my cortical fluid. Ah, you're killing me. I don't want to hear any more about Floyd Landis.
How do we know that the lab didn't just screw up?
Well, that's actually, the documents supposedly say that. That's what Landis's team is alleging. Not only were there issues with the testing, the science of the testing itself, the document, Landis's legal team alleges that they mixed up samples. Samples from other cyclists were tested and attributed to Landis.
Apparently some of these were bovine samples.
That's right. I went into my favorite cycling shop, Sonny's Bike Shop, the other day because I was having an oil change done at one of those big places, and there was a big crowd at the counter, and I just walked in and said, "Hey, Steve, is this where I get my testosterone injectables?" I don't know, just had a little fun with it.
And it's amazingly enough, he had a fridge right there.
I was good to go, man. I shot up. It was good.
As long as you stay away from that epitestosterone, that's what really screws you up.
Well, yeah, it's the whole ratio. So, I don't know. You want to just jump right into the first tune?
Yeah, we're good to go.
Yep. This is a woman that I met a couple of New Year's Eves ago. She was singing at a local hotel in their grand ballroom, doing a little jazz thing with a local pianist named Monk Rowe. And I got to know her a little bit, and she was gracious enough to send me a CD, a two CD sampler of tunes from all four of her CDs. She sent me 28 tracks in total. This was the very first one I heard. It really caught my ear, and I really liked it. This one is called Day Off, and the artist is Maria DeAngelis. So let's check it out.
Certain job had certain duties to fill. She cooked, she cleaned, and she had to be on call to divine her master's will. But once a month she had a day off. Obsession with the till, and on her monthly day off, she watched her passions chill. So while she scrubbed, she would search in vain for some exotic little thrill. Certain day in her master's house, she dusted the study's windowsill, and there she saw with a wondering eye that an eagle had left behind a quill. And on her monthly she held her feather still. Then back at work, she could feel a change as the feather transmogrified her will. And on her monthly day off, the girl resolved to kill. Lo and behold, the very next day, she found her master's body stilled. Mm-hmm. to find herself a thrill. The master's house slowly set into rot, except for one dusted windowsill.
Yeah.
Spectacular.
That's a real nice track.
I like that.
1,000 points for using the word transmogrify in a jazz song. Well, kind of a jazz song.
Yeah, I could see that like right in the middle of like an Elvis movie. Elvis walks into a bar. She's on stage. A lot of smoke haze. Elvis is watching her. And then they hook up in the end of the movie.
And they talk about transmogrification.
That's right.
And 5 extra bonus points for using triangle on the second and third verses, a little triangle percussion.
Yeah,
and
little device. What's that called?
It's called a vibraslap.
A vibraslap.
Yeah, the little... Yeah, that it's in like the, it's in the beginning of Blizzard of Oz by Ozzy Osbourne, one of the or Crazy Train or whatever, you know?
A lot of echo.
So she's got a really sweet voice. She's a great singer. It was really, really great of her to send me that little sampler CDs. And we're going to be hearing more of her in the future. So what are we drinking today, John?
We are drinking some more Screwcap Madness. This is Nine Stones Shiraz 2004.
It's a little bolder than the stuff we've had the last few weeks, but it's not gigantic either. It's actually quite pleasant.
I like the label, too, because on it, it has stones. Guess how many there are?
Well, probably about 9.
Let's see, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5.
9.
Imagine that. What a coincidence.
What do you think of the wine, Leo?
Oh, well, hey, it's the best wine I've ever tasted.
Here, let me pour in some of the microphone here.
Yeah, just, John was about to dump it onto the microphone, and he put the screw cap back on. Did we kill it?
No, I put it back on because you can.
That's true. It's much easier than reinserting a cork. So as I mentioned earlier, Leo is proprietor of the NeuralGourmet.com website. Really cool website for free thinkers, people who hate God, and all religious people.
We don't hate God. We just don't believe in him.
Now, are you a pagan? I mean, if you were going to believe in God, would you believe in many gods?
No, I don't. Well, if I were going to believe in God, I wouldn't believe in God. I mean,
wait a minute. Let me ask you another grilling question. How many pairs of goat leggings do you own?
Well, I mean...
I'll take that as a yes, mister.
He dances around fires, sharpens his blades.
Loyal puppies.
Now that sounds good.
So what was the whole deal? When you started NeuralGourmet, how long ago was that? How long has NeuralGourmet.com been active?
Believe it or not, April of last year. April 2005 now.
So you've been going almost a year and a half.
Yeah.
And I remember we would talk on the phone and you had... I don't know. I don't want to use the word misgivings, but you were disappointed in the fact that it wasn't getting as many hits as you had hoped it would. And but things take time. You know, there's an old saying, Rome wasn't built in a day. But now you've sent me some documentation that was clearly photoshopped and faked. But how many users did you have online the other day at the same time?
Well, 75, but I mean, that's not the record. When we got dug that one time back in, April of this year, I mean, there was 300-400 people on at a time.
That's cool, because yeah. When our forum in particular shows statistics of how many people are on at the one time, and the most we've ever had is 7.
There you go, yeah. Yeah, the dig effect is serious.
It's like the Slashdot effect.
That's right.
So what was the whole deal? Why did you start that up?
Well, I just wanted to do a community site for, as you said, free thinkers and skeptics and other people who are into the whole reality-based community thing.
And what would you define as reality?
Dead set. Tough room.
Is this going anywhere?
No, I had a question. Seriously, how would you define reality-based community?
Yeah, I mean, what are you sort of defining as non-reality? I mean, you know, to contrast with your reality.
Well, basically, as you know, a lot of people base their lives around superstition and rather dubious beliefs. And the people typically visit my site don't. We tend to be materialist. We tend to be secular humanist. We tend to be atheist. And I think John's visited it there once. Won't they kick you out of the church for that?
What's the word for that? What's the word to get kicked out of the church?
Excommunication.
You are excommunicated.
We should put an echo effect on that.
Yeah. Oh, I can. I will later. Don't worry.
No, but you see, and that's one of the reasons why I do visit it, because, you know, I'm a spy.
He actually is paid by the Pope to visit your website.
No, because there have been discussions on there, which I've taken part in. It's not just that I visited once or twice. And I don't have a problem with people who are skeptics. I don't have a problem with people who are atheists.
In fact, John is a skeptic.
I'm a skeptic.
I was going to say, John is a skeptic. And just because you believe in God doesn't mean that you're not a skeptic. It doesn't mean that you don't like evidence for when people make outrageous claims. It's just that people like me tend to take it one step further.
I'm kind of on the same page with Leo. I would consider myself an agnostic more than an atheist, because to me it just makes sense that, I mean, from a logical perspective, I can't prove that there is a God. I can't prove that there isn't a God. So to be an agnostic seems to be the most logical choice for me.
Safest, too. Sorry.
Rich looks really good in the horns and the pitchfork and the little red jumpsuit.
What does that mean? Because as far as I know, only my girlfriend's seen that suit.
It means you need better security on your computer.
good one. But yeah, that's the perspective I come from, and I rib John quite a bit about this. And I in some of the threads that John has participated in on NeuroGourmet, I sort of ribbed him a little bit too. I mean, on this show, I've said out loud many times that there's just as much evidence for Bigfoot as there is for a God, and yet Bigfoot fanatics are considered crazy, and people who go to the church every week are considered normal. You know, and that's the biggest problem I have with religion. I mean, I'm. You know, you're supposed to just believe, right? It's faith, right? But I just don't have that faith. I haven't met God, so I tend to... I'm an agnostic who actually leans towards atheism because I suspect there isn't a God.
Well, it's funny that you should bring that up, because, I mean, that's... expressing that type of view is something that atheists often get in trouble for. The classic line is comparing belief in religion to belief in Santa Claus, which is a little demeaning, because it compares believers in religious faith to children. It makes their faith out to be childish. And most people don't take that view with regard to their faith. They're not childish about it. But that's the thing. I mean, at what point do you stop demanding evidence?
Well, apparently they never demand evidence. It's the faith thing, right?
Well, that's not true, and maybe this is what I can shed on the conversation.
Shed, mister.
Because I think people from the outside...
He's malting right now.
People who don't participate in an organized church, they don't see what actually goes on. They don't see the discussion. And
but I used to go to church. Up until I was 16, I was made to go to church, and when I was turned the ripe old age of 16, I was given the option of not going, so...
I understand, but
I'm not goad.
I was the... You disgoad?
I ungoatooed.
I was the same 16-year-old, maybe not in the same body, but I was the same 16-year-old in the same mental state as being a 16-year-old, thinking about other things. And I didn't really pay much attention to what the church teachings really said. I didn't really pay attention to the history of the church. I just was saying, yeah, there's a whole bunch of rules, a whole bunch of stuff that everyone's memorizing and canting.
Some Latin and singing.
You know, there's some ritual
Gregorian
involved.
Gregorian chant.
But I didn't put a whole lot of thought into it. It was just later in life where I went back to it and started looking at it. And the reality is, in the church, there are heated debates about every single thing. And there's a lot of thought put into where every single thing came from, right from the early days of the church, right after the death of Jesus, all the way until today. And there are a lot of debates going on as to what we can believe, what we can't believe. So there's a lot of active discussion going on. I think that what's taken as faith, where you stop questioning it, is you say, okay, some of these things we're never going to know. That's what you take as faith. You just have no answer for. You're going to say that the pursuit is really what's the important thing. And the way that you live your life is the important thing. If we die and there is no God, well, then that's going to be the consequence. But the reality is, it's the way that some people have lived their lives for the better because of the religion. That's the hope, that it's done some good for people on this earth and then maybe later. There are other people who take religion, distort it, and use it for awful things. And I'm not going to defend them in one bit. That's it.
Well, I can't disagree with you. I mean, the religion has done some great things. The community aspect of most religious traditions in the U.S., great. Yeah, that's wonderful. And religion has done some terrible things. Some atheists have done terrible things. Look at Stalin.
well, yeah, he is a good example.
But, people do good things, people do bad things. Richard Dawkins, Sam Harris, those are two pretty famous atheists.
And he was great on Hogan's Heroes, as I pointed out a few weeks ago.
Richard Dawkins, of course, the evolutionary biologist. And
the father of memetics.
That's right. And Sam Harris, philosopher. I'm not sure of his academic background, but...
wasn't he the guy in Cheers?
Right.
Or is he the guy who just, he was in Snakes on a Plane and Pulp Fiction and...
No, that's Samuel L. Harris.
Oh, that's right.
Anyway, they've been advancing views that religion is harmful to society. And to a certain extent, I do agree with that. But to a larger extent, I don't. Because I'm not sure it's what you believe so much as how you believe it.
Oh, I definitely agree with that. I mean, but let me ask you a question. Weren't, like, religious people responsible for the Spanish imposition?
The slight discomfort.
Nobody expects Spanish inquisition.
No, it's the Spanish imposition.
Yeah, these Spaniard bishops, they just showed up at your doorstep and wouldn't leave.
They just kept putting pamphlets in your mailbox.
That's right.
Well, my general take on religion is that, you know, anyone who believes is weak and should be put on a cross. So, you know.
Oh, boy.
You know, that reminds me of a...
You should be our new atheist spokesperson.
I should be your PR guy. You know, that reminds me of a joke. I'm going to just take a little non sequitur left turn here. And I was sharing emails with a friend, I don't know, a year ago, 2 years ago, and I had just... It was probably longer than that, and I had just gotten done watching Gladiator. And I had gotten an email from a friend named Paul. He's another audio guy, a collector of vintage audio equipment. And he's a really bright guy, really well-read, you know, can speak intelligently on a lot of subjects. And we talked about whatever we were talking about, and then I started a new paragraph, and I said, those Romans could be a brutal lot, couldn't they? And I got a one-sentence or a brief one-sentence reply from him that said, yeah, they could be cross. I think that's one of the cleverest puns I've ever heard. But anyway.
Bump.
Yeah, it's a tough room.
Yeah, when you said that you were going to say a joke, I thought you were going to say something along the lines of a pope, a rabbi, and the Dalai Lama walked into a bar.
A monk, a clone, and a Ferengi walked into a bar.
Yeah.
So let's talk about your other little project you got going. And I know some of our listeners are actively involved with that, right? I mean, you're doing this blogging carnival called Carnival of the Liberals, right?
Yes, I'm a godless liberal.
Yes, you are, as was John Lennon. And... if I'm not mistaken, one of our listeners, Martin from Australia, actually
Martin is hosting next week.
Yeah, so Martin is very involved in that. So what's the theme of next week's Carnival of the Liberals?
I don't think there is one.
It's just liberalism?
Figures.
Just liberalism. Well,
so you're waffling, is that it?
You guys are just a bunch of waffling, no good
liberals.
Hippies, long hair, pot smoking. What else is there? What other epithet can I throw out there?
I don't know, but they're all true.
They're all true.
Well, you know what? I had
draft
never...
dodging.
Draft dodging, that's right. Not bathing, patchouli oil wearing,
that's
neck.
Fried dough foot looking neck.
So, and it's funny because before Leo had introduced me to the concept of a blogging carnival, I didn't know what it was. So why don't you tell people what that is?
Okay, well, the idea behind a blog carnival is that, depending upon the frequency of it.
What is the frequency? Is like 100 megahertz?
Yeah, what's the frequency, yeah. Kenneth?
Well, Carnival of the Liberals runs every other week on Wednesdays. And it moves. It changes host every week.
So the blog is actually hosted at a different person's blog every other week.
Right. And people send in what they think are their best blog posts in that time period. And now here's where Carnival of the Liberals differs from most blog carnivals. We're selective. We're elitist. We pick the 10 best ones for each carnival.
Keeping in the liberal theme, yeah, because liberals are mostly elitist.
That's right.
Although we do have one or two conservatives that regularly appear.
They're tokens, though.
Yeah, they're tokens.
They're token conservatives, that's right. But what is best? And that depends upon what the current host thinks.
And is the host, the person who is hosting it, like, for example, the upcoming one will be Martin from Australia, famous sender of wines.
Hey, Martin.
Hey, Martin. What's going on? Haven't heard from you in a while. Love you. So he will be the person who actually chooses which posts get posted.
That's correct.
And really all it is people are sending you stuff they've written, you know, left-leaning, commie pinko type stuff. And then they're chosen and they're just kind of displayed for people to read.
That's right.
And that's really all it is, right?
That's all it is. But there's a couple of reasons for doing it. I mean, first of all, because there are so many blogs out there, was it Technorati estimates that there's 70,000 new blogs created every hour?
It's like every second, actually.
And that was in 2005. That it's impossible to find stuff that you like. And so one of the neat things about a blog carnival is that it's doing the filtering for you. It helps introduce you to blogs that you might not normally have found on your own. But the other thing, and this is the one I kind of find to be the most important, it's a way of building community. It's a way of getting to know who else is blogging on a particular topic and to hopefully get a little bit of interaction going between your blogs. And, of course, there's the third reason, which is the links.
Yeah, cross-promotion on Google is a very important thing.
And right,
if I'm not mistaken, you started Carnival of the Liberals just because there weren't a lot of progressive carnivals, right?
Right. At the time I started Carnival of the Liberals, and I don't know if this is still true or not, but there were no other liberal blog carnivals. One of the ironic things is that the very first blog carnival, and more generally, the whole Netroots activism thing, was pioneered by conservatives. They're the ones that learned how to use the internet and the web to their advantage first. For some reason, liberals were lagging behind on that.
I think it's an intelligence thing.
And liberals are just laggers. You know, and according to Molly, who works at the Cafe Domenico, and if any of you heard our show live from the Cafe Domenico, you heard me scream her name. I do that a lot. she accused me of being a judder the other day. She said, Rich, you're jutting out into the aisle. And I said, oh, so I'm a judder? What does that mean?
Juddist.
Yeah, I'm a juddist.
Your juddification is just out of hand.
Well, at least I'm not transmogrifying.
you're spacious.
Spacious. That's a good one.
As opposed to a speciest.
Well, you know, what's funny is that it happened in the radio business as well, where...
And we're down with that. We know everything about radio.
No, I'm not talking about judding and spaciousism. I'm talking about, you know, the Rush Limbaugh. He became a media giant, and...
he is the king of all media.
No, that's the other guy.
That's right. That's Stern.
Yeah. He put his EIB network out there, which is the network of one show, not unlike someone else I know. And he's been emulated by a lot of other people, including liberals. And the sad thing is, here in the Syracuse radio airwave business...
Market,
that's the word I was looking for.
You're welcome.
Thank you. Sometimes Rich finishes my sentences. Anyways, most times Rich finishes my sentences.
Oh, only...
You see? There you go.
Ham-na-ham-na-ham-na-ham-na.
Anyways, in the Syracuse market...
That was your impression of what's his name? from the Honeymooners.
Ed Naughton.
Naughton.
In the Syracuse market, there used to be on the same channel, Rush Limbaugh would come on, and then there would be a local show, which was sort of like a middle-of-the-road kind of guy, talk show, local events. And then right after that was Ed Schultz, a progressive. Well, what happened was they dropped Ed Schultz, and guess who's on now after?
I don't know.
Hannity. So it's
Sean Hannity.
Yeah. So
yeah, he's not a progressive.
Yeah. So it's kind of sad because I liked Ed Schultz. I liked his positions on things.
Yeah. Well, we have that liberal network. What's that called? Air America?
Yeah, but they're in trouble. I mean, they're
big time.
I mean, first of all, they're not really a network. I'm going to get flamed by my liberal compatriots again, of course. That's nothing new. But Air America is in serious trouble, I think. I mean, they're going to file bankruptcy. Well, they claim they're not. But they're definitely undergoing a restructuring again.
It's code words for bankruptcy.
Yeah, exactly. And it's hard because one of the reasons that Rush Limbaugh was so successful is he was the first one to figure out how to merge that old right-wing populism typified by, like, Father Coughlin of the 30s with the FM sensibility of the 80s, which is when Limbaugh started on doing his whole EIB shtick.
Totally.
Right on.
Well, you know, and Limbaugh does a lot of things really well. I mean, he's a moron, and he has no idea what he's talking about.
You know, if he's anything, he's not stupid.
No,
I wouldn't call him stupid.
Well, I don't think he's an intellectual, but he's very good at doing a radio program. I mean,
yes.
That's what he's great at. He's an entertainer. Yeah. He's a shock jock. He's a Stern. He's not a journalist.
What he'll do is he'll take an event, and then he'll throw some hyperbole out there.
He'll lie.
Well, just like anyone. He'll throw stuff out there, make up names, and he'll try to put some humor
Deep
on
throat.
It. There you go. That's a different kind of name. He'll throw some humor into the situation, and then people will stop thinking. Then they'll start throwing names out like the feminazi thing. You
yeah.
Know?
Yeah, and he'll play crazy songs, you know, and then he'll tap his fingers like, you know.
Exactly.
Exactly.
And one of the sad things is that Air America just shit canned probably their version of Rush Limbaugh, Mike Malloy. Now, I really disagree with a lot of what Mike Malloy says because he promotes conspiracism and, he just doesn't typify the type of people I would rather have representing liberalism. But that aside, he was extraordinarily popular. He was extraordinarily entertaining, and they shit-canned him.
Dude, you're killing our G rating.
You've gone PG on us.
PG-13, maybe.
Can we go for R?
Yeah, let's not.
Breast.
I didn't hear that.
Rich can edit out so much.
I have the magic mouse. Well, there you go. I don't know. Let's head off into another segment. Let's play another tune. How do you feel about that, Leo?
Oh, it tickles me to know. And
Leo's website is www.neuralgourmet.com. It's one of my favorite website names on the planet, Neural Gourmet. How cool is that? Chilled monkey brains. It's a delicacy. You know, it just kind of takes me back to Harrison Ford movies.
Giant balls coming after you.
So what are we playing now, man?
Speaking of liberals, we have the Clintons again.
That's right, Bill and Hillary. And we played Fan of the Bean, which turned out to be an immensely popular song, if evidence of our forum is any evidence.
Yes, it's got one vote.
the previous was brought to you by the Department of Redundancy Department. But so we've got a tune. What's it called?
Come With Me.
By Bill and Hillary. Let's check it out.
Well, I can see you're brewing up your usual mischief, and I catch your contagious laugh. I talk about your all-time crushes, this one takes them all.
life begins to feel a little less heavy. There's a little more color every time I look around. I talk about you all time crushes. This one takes them all. I want to indulge in you. Too much of a good thing's never enough. Too bad we can't do this all the time. You breakfast. Either way, that's really all I know how to do. And if you don't care, we can skip out on this town and sort it out tomorrow. Tomorrow. I want a window in you. Too much of a good thing's never enough. Too bad we can't do this all the time. Get away, baby. Come with me. So great to be alive. Come with me. And forget about the drums and the winning and bringing you down.
That's a nice track.
Yeah, I think they got something.
I enjoyed that.
Those guys seem to get production. I mean, the recording sounds great. Everything about the recording is just right on. You know, one of the things that the guy who taught me the most in recording school was the song will tell you what to do. So once you have all their tracks recorded, you know, you can decide what sorts of delay and echo and all sorts of things to do to the track. And it's like they did everything right, you know? They just got it. I love that stuff.
Well, when you were in this recording school, was it like one of those deals where you had to shave your head and you had to put your hand in like hot coals?
Well, no. There was this gigantic cast iron urn with red hot coals in it, and I had to like kind of like squeeze it with my forearms.
And you had to pick it up, and then you were branded with those dragons or something.
On the side of the urn, and then I was just cast off into the snow.
That's right.
Yeah.
And then you were deemed worthy.
Yeah, and I was called Grasshopper many times.
In fact, you had to practice on a block of wood instead of a mixing board for several years.
And I walked on rice paper all the time.
It's true.
Yeah.
You guys just stole all my jokes.
Oh, sorry.
I like that tune, though. It was like a hip, up with people.
Up with people.
Wow. That takes me back to seventh grade when Up With People was actually still doing their thing, and they came to our school. And they kind of performed for us. And that was the big Super Bowl halftime act that year, which would put it about 78 or 79, was Up With People. You know, it wasn't U2. It wasn't Aerosmith. It wasn't Britney Spears. It was Up With People.
No Janet Jackson with the Up With People didn't have
A wardrobe malfunction? Yeah. No, that didn't. So I want to talk briefly about a film I saw last night, and I'm assigning this to everyone as homework because I want to talk about this in the future. We talked briefly about electric cars and alternative energy in the past, and if I'm not mistaken, Kay from Arizona didn't like anything we had to say because it involved shards of glass in retail stores. But anyway, I saw a film last night or two nights ago or something like that called Who Killed the Electric Car? It's a 2006 production directed by Chris Payne, 92 minutes, and it asks the burning question, who killed the electric car? And a horn just honked as if it heard me talking about cars.
Maybe it killed the electric car.
Where was that horn coming from anyway, Leo? Where are you located right now?
I'm high above the bustling metropolis of Cherry Valley, located on the third floor of the F.G. Finley building or something like that.
And that's...
Gilday or...
How far are you from Cooperstown?
I'm 13 miles from Cooperstown.
And if I'm not mistaken, that's Andy Van Slyke's birthplace.
Really?
No, it's not. But when he was asked where he was from, he said, I'm from near Cooperstown, instead of just saying New Hartford, New York. You know, because everybody...
Oh, but,
what's that?
I was going to say no, but Deborah Harry's parents ran a store there.
Really?
Wow, Blondie. How cool is she?
Wow.
Not, actually. So anyway, Who Killed the Electric Car, and what is this film about? It's a documentary about, basically it's about the electric car in general, but it's more specifically about the Saturn EV1, which was a prototype electric car that GM, when it was a prototype, it was called the Impact, which is kind of funny because you never want to think about cars impacting anything. But I think ultimately they released it as the EV1, Electric Vehicle Numero Uno, under the Saturn brand name.
Highly imaginative.
Yeah, very, very clever name. But the reason this car was put out was because a few years ago, California enacted some legislation that said that 10%, if you want to sell cars in my state, this was a law directed at the big three or automakers in general. If you want to sell cars in my state, by this year, 10% of them have to be zero emissions vehicles, ZEV.
So not low emissions vehicles.
No,
you see stickers
zero.
On a lot of them these days.
Yeah, no hybrids. These had to be electric. Well, the only emissions they have is like ozone, but that's cool because
and
it,
water
and it enforces
no,
the ozone layer. That's right. So I'm, you know, this film is sort of shot from a perspective of, you know, people who would be in favor of electric cars, of course, right? And the way the film was shot, it kind of looked as if GM put out electric cars, you know, kind of in the meantime, maybe develop some technology for the future, but they put them out kind of knowing that they were eventually this California law was going to go away from pressure from the oil industry, oil lobbyists, and the government. And that's actually what ended up happening. A variety of people got on board with lawsuits and kind of sued the state of California. And among them were the oil industries, individual car dealerships, and the Bush administration. Thank you very much. So they ultimately made this law disappear. And what really, really irks me the most about this film is that, you know, GM was probably a little, and I own a GM car now, and I'm a little unhappy with them. You know, I bought the car because Americans made it, and it was a good price, and I could get my bike into it, and it got good fuel economy. So, but I'm not a GM lover in general, and I'm not a big lover of big corporations at all, as you've heard me talk about, because they tend to break the rules and, you know, get laws passed in their favor and lobby and do all sorts of evil things, low wages, you know, all those kinds of things.
Different show, but we'll get into
it. It's a different show. But it seems to me as though GM was being a little disingenuous when they put out this car, because the people that they sold it to, they didn't sell it to at all. The first 5,000 or whatever that number was customers were leased the cars. Kind of, and it almost looked like GM was being forward thinking. You know, we're actually not going to sell them the cars. We're going to lease them the cars, because once we get rid of this law that says 10% of all vehicles have to be zero emissions vehicles, we won't need to have these on the road anymore. And in fact, once the law disappeared and the leases were done from everyone that they had leased vehicles to, they took the vehicles back. They weren't given options to buy, and the vehicles were destroyed. And to me, that says, well, we're destroying them because we don't actually want anybody to see that you can have a zero emissions vehicle. And we don't want to start some sort of groundswell, sort of underground grassroots movement of people demanding electric cars. So we're just going to make them go away as if they had never existed. And that really pisses me off, actually, because I would much rather be driving a car that gets 40 or 50 or 60 or 70 miles per gallon. My fuel bills will go down and my impact on the earth will be zero. Well, not zero, but it'll be significantly less. And you and I kind of drew the conclusion that electric cars weren't necessarily the answer because they pollute too, because they have batteries that have to be disposed of and things like that.
Type of pollution. It's the pollution on the back end, not pollution up front.
Right. But after seeing this film, I'm absolutely convinced that it's absolutely the most important thing we can do is get rid of emissions, and we can sort of deal with the battery problem on the back end. I'm absolutely convinced of that now.
Sure.
And we really need to get these zero emissions vehicles going. These hybrids seem to be a compromise, right? Because big oil can sell their oil and we can get gas mileage up a little bit. But it just seems to be a compromise. And I think mm-hmm. we need to – Ed Begley, who's a big proponent of electric vehicles and alternative energy, at one point in the film was kind of being sarcastic. And he said, you know what? Everybody's right. These vehicles just aren't for everybody. Pause, pause, pause. They're only for 90% of the population of the world, you know? And if we got 90% of the population of the world driving electric vehicles, the world would be a much better place to live in. Smog would go down. CO2 emissions go down. And everybody complains about their – they don't have a great range. You know, 120 miles was, I believe, the range of the EV1. Statistics bear out – I mean, the highway – Traffic Safety Board, or whatever they call that thing that the federal government maintains statistics on, shows that the typical U.S. driver drives 19.1 miles a day. So, okay, 120 miles range sounds like plenty.
Yeah, for most people it is. And my take on this is, even if emissions were, you know, there's no net gain, no net loss for the electric vehicle, I'm more concerned about our dependence on foreign oil. Really, that's what it is for me personally. And if anyone who's seen what's been going on these past, you know, bunch of years, we know that this ridiculous war that's going on in the Middle East and all this talk of terrorism, it's the only reason why we're concerned about it really is because of our dependence on oil.
Well, foreign oil dependency is certainly a huge thing, but for me, it's about greenhouse gases. I mean, the film threw out a lot of statistics, and I can't quote any of them at the moment, but they're out there, you know? And, I mean, a zero emissions vehicle would be something I would love to have the option of driving. I mean, it seems to me that perhaps a two-car family, the ideal situation for the typical two-car family would be an electric car and a hybrid, right? Because if you go on vacation, you might want a little more range. You drive the hybrid. But commuting to and from work, you drive the electric car. What do you think, Leo?
Well, obviously, I mean, I'm very much for electric cars. I think we have to do something to continue to be reliant upon oil.
We have to do something to be reliant upon oil? Wait a minute. We're already doing that. Wait a minute.
Let's do more.
I've heard George Bush say we're addicted to oil even.
So bring it on.
I think we need to continue. I think we need to do something because if we continue to be reliant upon oil, which is, I mean, you're talking about an 18th century technology, essentially. 1700s, right?
Well, what do you mean?
The electric car is an 18th century technology.
No, it isn't. We've gotten this conversation way off track.
Well, what were you referring to as being an 18th century technology? Internal combustion engine?
No, burning oil.
Oh, right? Well, but certainly burning oil, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, you know, this is ridiculous. It is one of the most energy efficient forms of energy that we have in terms of getting out more than we put into producing it. But even then, I'm not so sure. I mean,
well, we get a lot of pollution. I mean, that's what we don't
want.
We
get a lot of pollution, but I mean, how much energy goes into producing a barrel of oil?
Well, it's
What about transporting oil? What about, you know, what value are, what's the number now? 2,600, 2,700, 2,800 American lives lost?
It's over 3,000.
How many Iraqi lives lost?
It's immeasurable. Five figures at least, if not six figures.
These are externalities we do not count into our energy production, and we probably should. I mean, I know
we definitely should.
It you know, how do you value a human life? But you know, the fact of the matter is, how much has the war cost? How many trillions? And all this really should be counted into the cost of a barrel of oil.
Well, one of the things they talked about in this film was it's estimated that there are a trillion barrels of oil left in the earth, right?
Right.
And if they can raise the price to $100 a barrel, that means there's $100 trillion of business, gross business, that's left to be done.
Well, here's the problem I have with that sort of thinking. I mean, it's conspiratorial.
Well, it's not conspiratorial at all.
Well, it is.
But it's based on fact. I mean, they can geologically, they can get it rough.
No, that's not the conspiratorial part. The conspiratorial part is positing that the reason GM got rid of the electric cars and, in effect, destroyed them all was to create an artificial energy shortage so that they could rack up the cost of gasoline.
Well, but GM is not an oil maker, so that wasn't my position at all. In fact, my position is auto manufacturers shouldn't care what the form of propulsion is at all because they still get to make cars. Oil is the one who should be concerned about electric cars, not the big three.
Yeah, and when I was working in advertising way back when, in print advertising, I was working for a newspaper, and a newspaper is in the same position as I think the automakers are today because there are so many other forms of media, especially with the internet coming on now. The newspaper is not in the position of being a printer of paper, a pusher of paper. A newspaper should be in the position of pushing media, pushing information around. You know, if they move off the paper and into the internet, that's what their position is. Their business is all about moving information. And the automakers are about building things which make people go from point A to point B.
Right.
They shouldn't care about oil.
I agree. And that's what I was getting at with where I disagree with this film, which I have not even seen.
Typical liberal position.
But and Ritual hounded me for months to see this film, you know.
When he
assigns homework, I mean, my God, he's a taskmaster.
No, it was the
At
motorcycle
least 14
film.
14 years ago, he's been asking me to watch this film, you know?
Well, no, I
Before
actually...
Before I
would,
met him, he watched me to ask this
I'm
film.
Encouraging all of our viewers to watch this film so we can kind of talk about it in the future.
They should. They should watch it.
And you should watch it, too, and I'm sure you will you go to your local movie theater and watch it. As John blinds me with reflecting the room light of a CD in my eyes. But, I mean, I hate to cut us off, but we're kind of getting along here, so I think we should just call the show quits. What do you think, Leo? What I would like to do, though, is recommend that everybody see this film, Who Killed the Electric Car, and we'll get you on Skype again, and we'll talk about it again. How does that sound?
That's cool. And to tell you what, I'll review it on NeuroGourmet, too.
Okay. Well, that's cool. So, John, wake up.
What?
The show's over, man. Hit the klaxons. Wow. Well, hey, Leo, thanks for being with us. We're definitely going to have you back again in a couple of weeks. We're going to give our viewers, our listeners, some time to watch that film. So we loved having you here, and we'll have you again in the future.
Yeah, and good luck on the neurogourmet.com.
That's right. Everybody check that out. And check us out on the web, www.bloodyveg.com.
Send us large parcels of cash.
Send us wine. Send us everything.
Feedback at bloodyveg.com.
Check out our forum. It's www.bloodyveg.com/forum. And there you can disagree with us, agree with us, hurl vegetables.
And again, you know, send
racial,
cash.
Racial epithets, everything. Just remember, you're listening to The VIB.